giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Brett's Insiders with Adam Vingan and Willie Donig. Smashville lives here on 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Brett's Insiders on 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan here with you alongside the Tennesseans, Alex Daugherty. Alex, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again.
Always a pleasure to have you to talk about the local professional hockey team. And that local professional hockey team won big on Tuesday, a 5-1 win against the Calgary Flames, the two worst teams in the NHL, going head-to-head. Somebody had to win. Mm-hmm. And the Predators came out on top, 3 goals in the second period. Reid Schaefer scores his first career NHL goal. Ozzie Weisblatt scores his first career NHL goal. Steven Stamkos records point number 1,200. Becoming the sixth active player in the NHL with at least 1,200 points, joining Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, Evgeny Malkin, Patrick Kane, and Anze Kopitar. And the Predators, if my math is right here, Alex, have won 3 of the past 4.
Mm-hmm.
So, not something we've seen the Predators do, not just this season, but last season as well, excuse me. It's been a minute since the Predators have had even 3 wins in a 4-game span. So,
and their largest point, largest margin of victory against the Flames. They previously it was 3 goals, and then they beat the Flames by 4. So,
and I thought the Predators were bad. The Flames, woof.
Yeah. One thing we know about the Predators is they are better than the Calgary Flames.
That is indeed true. And if you look at the NHL standings as of Wednesday afternoon, they are indeed ahead of the Calgary Flames. Now, both teams have 22 points, but the Predators have played 2 fewer games. So,
and 2-0 head-to-head against them, yeah.
Well, you got to beat somebody. And that's what the Predators did last night. But let's talk about some of the feel-good stories coming out of the game last night. As I mentioned, Reid Schaefer, in his third NHL game, scores his first NHL goal. Ozzie Weisblatt scores his first NHL goal as well. A nice moment there. He points to the sky, honoring his late brother, Orca, who died in a car accident earlier this year. He was 25, which is just devastating. And I saw Weisblatt's interview after the game, clearly emotional, not just about scoring his first NHL goal and fulfilling a dream, but doing it in honor of his late brother. Here's a fun stat for you. Ozzie Weisblatt and Reid Schaefer are the 5th pair of teammates in franchise history to score their first career goals in the same game. And the list of the other pairs is hilarious.
It's great.
Colin Blackwell and Pecorine on January 9th, 2020. I was there for that game. That was fun.
In the United Center.
In the United Center.
No,
March.
Sorry.
March.
Sorry. United Center.
Yes.
Not the United Center.
Yes, that's a separate conversation. March 2014, Cali Yarncroke and Colton Sissons. October 2008, Patrick Hornquist and Ryan Jones. And January 2004, Simon Gamache and Andrew Hutchinson. So Schaefer and Weisblatt joined that illustrious group as the 5th pair of Predators teammates to score their first career NHL goals in the same game.
I mean, there's some pretty good names in there. And if the Schaefer-Weisblatt combo is something similar to the Sissons-Yarncroke combo, that's not bad. That'd be a good result for the Predators, right?
I was hoping for more of the Gamache-Hutchinson
combo.
I had to look up to make sure that Simon Gamache was an actual person. I don't know how many NHL games, Simon Gamache played, but good for you, Simon Gamache. I hope I'm even pronouncing your last name correctly.
I think that's right.
But let's talk about Schaefer first. Schaefer makes his NHL debut in Chicago late last week. He was part of the return from the Edmonton Oilers in the Matthias Ekholm trade a couple of years ago. Big-bodied player, and he has shown that since he made his NHL debut. So over the past 3 games, Schaefer leads the Predators in scoring chances with 7, 6 slot shots on net, which also leads the Predators. All 6 of those slot shots have actually come from the inner slot, so right in front of the net. All 3 of those, scoring chances, slot shots, inner slot shots. Schaefer leads the Predators in all 3 categories since he made his NHL debut. So I think he's living up to what the Predators hoped he would be when they traded for him 2 years ago. I mean, it's early, right? Yeah. It's only been three games. But in terms of the process, in terms of where he's going to score the goals, to try to score the goals, he's doing what the Predators thought he would do when they brought him in.
And that's exactly the kind of goal he scored for his first. He was as close to the goaltender as you can get without getting called for interference, right? And he gets a rebound and just slams it home. I think Reed Schaefer is such an interesting part of this future because he's been a guy that Barry Trotz has mentioned it feels like a million times.
Mm-hmm.
Every chance he gets, he throws out Reed Schaefer's name. I think part of that is because it's a name that is attached to the Matthias Ekholm trade, which Barry Trotz was a part of. I mean, guys, we don't really know how much he was a part of because that was when David Poile was still technically in charge, but he still has some ownership of that move.
And that trade also includes Tanner Mullendyke, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, it does, because that was the draft pick. So Reed Schaefer is like a guy who Barry Trotz has mentioned, and most of the draft experts, prospect experts, consider Reed Schaefer not a top-line scorer, right? He's probably trends as a bottom six player who has some size and can muck it up in the front. But like, he's not going to be a 20 goal a year guy, at least like most people don't think that. But it's a good start. You know, it's a really good start for him. And if he becomes a guy that can get you, if he's like an Austin Watson or even a Michael McCarron type, even though he's not a center, that's not the worst thing in the world. You need some guys like that, and you need them young, and you need them cheap over the next, you know, several years or so.
Ozzie Weisblatt has been a pleasure to watch this season. I love players who you can tell, even from where we sit, Alex, I love players who you can tell just piss off the opponents.
Yeah.
And Ozzie Weisblatt knows exactly what to do to get under his opponent's skin. People forget that Ozzie Weisblatt was a first-round draft pick. He was a first-round draft pick of the San Jose Sharks, 31st overall in 2020. Now, he hasn't lived up to that billing, and I'll often say when the selling point for a player is, well, he was a former first-round pick, that's usually a bad sign. But Weisblatt, he's been part of the organization now for a couple of years, right? He went to Milwaukee first. Am I correct in saying he was there on an AHL-only deal to start?
I don't recall exactly, but it may have been that way.
But he came up, and he's been in the lineup basically every game, if not every game, for the Predators so far this season. And Ozzie Weisblatt, he's not going to be a needle mover in the long run, but as you were mentioning earlier, Alex, you need those bottom six forwards who can make a difference one way or another. And even if Weisblatt isn't going to score many goals, if he's drawing penalties, if he's goading opponents into doing something stupid, if he's charging the net, forechecking, all of those things, there is value in those things. And Weisblatt has played his role, I think, incredibly well so far this season.
Certainly. You could think of him as a poor man's Victor Arvidsson type. He's not the Victor Arvidsson skill, but he does a lot of that. I mean, Victor Arvidsson always had a good ability to get under people's skin and a fierce forechecker and such. Michael McCarron, when asked about, this was, I want to say a month ago, maybe sometime in October, he said of Ozzie Weisblatt, he said that it seems like every day someone's coming up to me saying, what's wrong with this kid? I think that might have been around when they last played the Flames, because I believe Ozzie got in a fight in that game too. He's a feisty kid. And then also just, you know, obviously you mentioned the moment honoring his brother. It's like he had a brief moment. This is how I phrased it, or it talked about it in the story that I wrote about it. The brief moment of elation scoring the goal immediately gave way to the remembering his brother and pointing up and everything. And it was like seeing all those emotions kind of at the same time of like, hey, I just scored. Hey, I just scored my first NHL goal. And then he knew exactly how he wanted to remember it. I thought it was just great. And he talked about it afterwards. And a lot of players were talking about it. Andrew Brunette did as well. And they said it was the loudest cheer of the bench after a goal this year is what the team and coach reported.
Ozzie Weisblatt, one of five children and the Wiseblatt family, Ozzy, Orca, Ocean, Oasis.
And Oceana.
And Oceana.
Yeah.
Is that five?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
It's hard to remember. I do love alliteration, but it is hard to remember all of those names.
Yeah. It's a really, really cool story. Everything about that family is just fascinating. And now we get to keep watching Ozzy. You know, I talked to him today and just, you know, the natural follow-up question the day after a guy scores his first NHL goal is how many text messages, how many phone calls and all
right,
that stuff.
Right.
And of course he said he had a lot of those, but he said that, you know, it's really just nice to be kind of over it. And now he can just kind of move past and now he can just worry about getting the next one and just playing his game. And he seemed very happy with everything that turned out, but he doesn't seem like, emotionally drained. He seems like he's just ready to go. He's ready to go to the next game. So
the Predators have won 3 of 5 since Barry Trotz told Greg Rusinski of ESPN that the next 7 or 8 games would be a good indicator of how he proceeds, because those quotes came, the story was published the day after the Florida game, but Trotz spoke to Greg before the Florida game. So they are 3-2 since he made that statement. And there are a lot of people listening right now, Alex, who are freaking out because they're worried that 3 wins in 5 games is going to drastically alter Barry Trotz's decision-making process.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to worry about that. We talked to Barry Trotz on DVD on Tuesday. He's being realistic. Of course, he's happy about how things are going. I don't think you need to worry about the Predators suddenly becoming buyers or not selling because they've won 3 out of 5.
Definitely not. Buyers for sure not. And I think that he's realistic enough to know that he's going to at least sell some of these expiring contracts. And I think he'll probably talk about, you know, seriously considering Ryan O'Reilly as well, which I think we'll talk about.
Indeed. What a great segue. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we will talk about Ryan O'Reilly because I asked Barry Trotz on Tuesday about Ryan O'Reilly, the reported asking price for Ryan O'Reilly, and whether he values O'Reilly's leadership more than the premium assets he could get in return for O'Reilly in a trade. We will discuss that coming up next. Adam Vingan with Alex Darty tonight. It's Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game.
I would love that if, you know, that wasn't my ask. Just let people know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff that's out in the marketplace right now that is not accurate at all. But it's great reading and it's great social media and it gets everybody their hits and all that. And but I would say that, you know, Ryan O'Reilly is a very valuable player to the Nashville Predators, not only on the ice, but culturally and all that. That the ask is definitely in that ballpark for sure. And, you know, that to me, the difficult question I know that you're going to ask is how do you weigh that?
Right.
And it's very difficult. So if you set a certain price and you get it, then you have to live by it a lot of times. But, you know, that wasn't something that was put out by me. That was from someone else. I have my price and on certain things. And the people I've talked to that have called me and asked about him, I've given them a certain price tag, if you will.
That was Predators GM Barry Trotz on DVD on Tuesday, live from Bridgestone Arena. Talking Ryan O'Reilly, Adam Vingan here with Alex Darty of the Tennessean on Preds Insiders. And Alex, the question I asked to Trotz that solicited that answer was, there was a report from TSN last week, I think right after we talked to Trotz on DVD, from Pierre LeBrun of TSN, who said that the asking price for O'Reilly is quote-unquote likely a first-round pick and an A-level prospect.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked Trotz, is that an accurate description of what it would take to trade Ryan O'Reilly? Now, as you just heard, he said it didn't come from him, but he didn't deny that framework is in the ballpark.
Yeah.
So my takeaway from that, Alex, is it's going to take an astronomical price to pry Ryan O'Reilly out of Nashville. I think at bare minimum, it's going to take the return that the Islanders received last season from the Colorado Avalanche when the Islanders traded Brock Nelson. It was a first-round pick and a top prospect by the name of Cal Ritchie, a top forward prospect. I believe there was also a third round pick in there, but namely a first round pick and a top prospect. I think that's the baseline for what it's going to take to get O'Reilly out of here.
I think so too. The only thing I would consider is if the prospect is good enough, would you go down to a second round pick?
That's part of the equation,
yeah,
for sure.
And so like I think that's important because for whatever reason teams are do not, especially if they're maybe consider a team like Montreal, for example. Montreal is not back, but they're not totally rebuilding, right? They've got good young players. They could probably make the playoffs this season. So, like, would a team like they also need a center. So, like, would a team like Montreal be willing to part with one of their really good prospects? They have a couple of really top-notch center forward prospects, but instead of a first, consider a center because a second-round pick because their prospects are that much better. So, something like that. I think the price that you've the price tag you've set out sounds exactly right, and the one that Pierre LeBrun and others have talked about. I do love the way that Barry Trotz is just like, you know, he's so open, but he's also like, I don't know, I mean, no idea where this is coming from. He's also one of the most accessible and willing to talk to anyone general managers in the league.
Yes.
So it's like, well, Barry, I mean, you do talk to everyone, so it's got to be coming from somewhere.
Right. When you talk to as many people as Barry Trotz talks to,
right,
something is inevitably going to get out. By the way, I want to, I've got to shame myself here. I meant to say elicited a response, not solicited a response.
Oh,
I felt shame as I said it, and I want to correct it for the record. Elicited a response, not solicited a response.
I
know my words. Nevertheless, another question I asked Trotz yesterday, and I know this is a Predator show, but I brought the Titans into this with Barry Trotz.
Oh.
Because to me, I've made this comparison on DVD many times. I see Ryan O'Reilly as the Predators version of Jeffrey Simmons. And when the NFL trade deadline was rolling around, a lot of us wanted the Titans to trade Jeffrey Simmons because, look, both teams are at or near the bottom of their respective leagues. And Jeffrey Simmons was the only player on the Tennessee Titans who could get the Titans something of value to help jumpstart their rebuild. But Titans GM Mike Borgonzi said, we didn't even consider it. There were reports before the NFL trade deadline that Simmons was off limits. And then after the deadline, Mike Borgonzi said, we never considered it. We value Jeffrey Simmons for what he can bring to this team to help us rebuild this culture. That's a long-winded way of saying, I asked Trotz if O'Reilly's intangibles are more valuable to him than the premium assets he could get in a trade. And to Trotz's credit, although he praised O'Reilly for all of his leadership qualities, he did not rule out a trade of Ryan O'Reilly. He did not say, I'm not even considering it, like the Titans apparently did leading up to the NFL trade deadline. And I think that's the right way to go about it. I really don't think that anybody on this team should be off limits. Now, there are players who can be off limits because it's their choice, like Roman Josi or Philip Forsberg or UC Saros or Steven Stamkos. O'Reilly does not have that protection, although the Predators treat him as if he does. But the other thing too, Alex, and Derek Mason made this point astutely on our program yesterday, the difference between the Titans and the Predators is that without Jeffrey Simmons, the Titans don't really have any leaders. If you were to trade O'Reilly, you still have Josi, you still have Forsberg, you still have Saros, you still have Stamkos. So there wouldn't be a leadership void if you traded O'Reilly.
That's true. I think the problem is that Barry Trotz is so tied to Ryan O'Reilly being the cultural fix for this team when he came in here, because it was combined with the buyout of Matt Duchene, the trade of Ryan Johansson, and coming in and saying Ryan O'Reilly is going to set the stage for this next, you know, era of the Nashville Predators, and he's done that. I mean, he only signed him for 4 years, so it's not like if he trades him now, he's totally giving up on that. But I just think it ups the price, right? It changes the math for Barry in terms of how much he's willing to go, how high he's willing to go on O'Reilly. And the other thing is, and I think this is similar with Jeffrey Simmons. I don't cover the Titans, but I do understand his value. Is O'Reilly is far and away the most tradable asset on this team. Mm-hmm. He is. I know he's 34. He'll be 35 by the end of the season. He is the most valuable player to trade that because he doesn't have a trade clause, and he's also the best center on the team. He's a fantastic face-off man.
Proven winner.
He's a proven winner. He's produced. He leads the team in points right now. I know it's not great on a bad offensive team, but he does that. He's not slowing down either. I don't think he's playing the same amount of minutes he normally does. Nothing really in his game suggests that he's, you know, playing poorly. So for a team to want that for this season and then also a full season the following year, I think he has to expect the price to be pretty high. Maybe even he expects more than what the Islanders got for Brock Nelson.
My buddy Joe Yearden over at Bleacher Report wrote a story looking at potential trade destinations for Ryan O'Reilly. I'll list them here. You tell me which of these teams intrigues you most as a potential trade partner. Montreal, Detroit, Florida, New Jersey, Boston, Vancouver.
Definitely Montreal and New Jersey are the two that I've thought about the most.
He's been linked to New Jersey in the past.
Yeah. Florida's interesting because could they see this as just like, we need O'Reilly to get us through our Barkov-less, you know, since Sasha Barkov is out for the year. He could be like the substitute for that, so they could still make it. They can, with this core, still make another run. Florida's interesting. And the other one, Winnipeg.
Montreal.
Montreal, I think, makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Montreal makes a lot of sense. They do not have a center like O'Reilly at all. And they have a great group of young players that could really use an O'Reilly in that room.
Can you imagine Ryan O'Reilly backing up Nick Suzuki in Montreal as that team that made an unexpected playoff appearance tries to do it again? I think from a without knowing all of the salary cap implications and stuff, O'Reilly in Montreal makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. Same with the Devils. He's been linked to the Devils before. Jack Hughes is out, but he'll be back. They've got Nico Hischier as well. That would really solidify that center group. Boston,
I can't see that as much.
Yeah, they've got their own problems at center. Elias Lindholm, who could have seen that coming in terms of a long-term contract that wasn't going to work out. Casey Mittelstadt, again, hasn't worked out. Yeah. Pavel Zacha, you know, hasn't worked out. Other than Morgan Geeky, who has scored 20-something goals out of nowhere, although he did have a good season last year, but nobody expected him to do it again. You know, the idea of O'Reilly, like, I can see him in the Bruins jersey. Like, it fits, right? Like, the player he is, the history of the Bruins, it fits. Same with the Canadiens. I can just see it.
Yeah.
So all of those destinations make some sense, but, like, on the list that Joe Yearden published at Bleacher Report, Montreal was the one that jumped out to me.
Yeah, it definitely makes a lot of sense. And also for Nashville, I'm telling you, there's two prospects they have, Michael Hague, who they got last year, and then Alex Jarofsky, who is a fantastic Russian scoring winger. I know he's not a center, but he's a winger. If you can find a way to convince the Canadians that they need Ryan O'Reilly for the next, you know, year and a half and would be willing to part with one of those guys, you have absolutely cashed in on the Ryan O'Reilly sweepstakes.
It will be interesting to see because, as you laid out, Alex, he has all the intangibles. You can trust him in any situation. He's won the Stanley Cup. He's won the Conn Smythe Trophy. Wins big face-offs. Isn't afraid to get his hands dirty. GMs go gaga over players like Ryan O'Reilly.
And they do it for guys who don't produce nearly as much as him. I mean, they will go after guys who have all those things, and that's kind of all they have, right? Mm-hmm. And they'll trade second-round picks for him. And here you've got a guy who has all that, plus fantastic on-ice production. And it's like, man, I would definitely expect a first-round and a prospect for a guy like that, maybe even more.
I think a first-round pick and a prospect is absolutely a reasonable ask for the Predators if they trade Ryan O'Reilly. Coming up next, Ryan O'Reilly represents the aging core of the Nashville Predators, along with Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, etc. Who represents the new core? That's the question Barry Trotz is trying to answer. Alex and I will attempt to answer it coming up next. This is Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan alongside Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean this week, filling in for Willie Donick, who is in Sunrise, Florida with the Predators. They take on the defending Stanley Cup champion, the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers tomorrow in South Florida. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5, right here on 102.5 The Game. Of course, the Panthers bludgeoned the Predators a week and a half ago, 8-3 at Bridgestone Arena. So we'll see if the Predators can exact revenge on the Panthers for that beatdown a week and a half ago. The Predators then go to Raleigh to take on the Hurricanes on Saturday before returning home next Tuesday to take on the league-leading Colorado Avalanche, who, by the way, have still only lost one game in regulation, and it's December 3rd. That's insane. This is absolutely insane.
This has nothing to do with what you're talking about, but I just wanted to say that I really need to work bludgeon into more of my copy.
Bludgeoned is a good word.
It's a great one.
I like the word bludgeoned. It's a go-to for me when things go bad
when
for the Nashville
Predators.
Yes, and it's unfortunately been happening a lot more than I am accustomed to. But anyway, the Predators are looking to build a new core. We know this. Barry Trotz has said it on multiple occasions. He's trying to blend, that's his word, the younger players with the older players as the even younger players continue to develop. He's trying to find out who will be a part of the new core. So that's what Alex and I are going to do right now. We are going to attempt to figure out who represents that new core. And some of those players may not be on the Predators right now. They may be in the American League. They may be in junior. They may be in college. All of those players are on the table. So, Alex, if you are putting together the new core of the Nashville Predators, who are you including?
Okay, so I actually, the way I think about this, and this is how I was kind of arranging this in my thoughts, I think about it like there's four categories here. I have like a high-end forward and a low-end forward.
Okay.
And a high-end defense and a low-end defense.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start with the forwards and then see what you think about this. So like high-end forwards, I think the core, and by the way, I don't know if we're setting a number on how many should be a part of the core.
Well, we can start with the players you have and we can whittle it down if we need to.
Okay. I think the keys to the high-end forward are Matthew Wood, Brady Martin, and Luke Evangelista.
Okay.
Are the three that I think are the ones that will be the most consistent and are the most ready and the most proven so far. Now, I know Brady Martin is not proven so far. He played three games, but he does seem to be one that if the coaching staff was looking at him and saying, hey, we can start this guy on opening night, I feel like there's something there, and I think he's going to come in and be a part of that. So the high-end forwards, Matthew Wood, Brady Martin, Luke Evangelista. The low-end forwards that I think will be reasonably expected to contribute and be a part of the core would be Fedor Svechkov, probably Reed Schaefer, and Ozzie Weisblatt. And now David Edstrom is the one that I still don't know, and so I think I'm going to not include him yet because he's not debuted, he's not part of this yet. I'm really hesitant to put guys in there. Like I wanted to put Igor Surin in there, but like he's in Russia, and I mean there's no guarantee we're going to see any of these guys produce at all. So like I'm really hesitant to put those guys in this future core unless we're talking like 10 years down the road. But that's kind of where I'm thinking right now with the forwards.
Let's single out Luke Evangelista for a moment.
Okay.
I have been incredibly impressed by Luke Evangelista so far this season.
Yeah.
He has 8 points in his past 5 games, 2 goals, 6 assists. He has 18 points, 4 goals, 14 assists in 25 games.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, he didn't go to training camp because he was in a contract dispute with the Predators. And, you know, I've always thought of Luke Evangelista as a nice middle six kind of player. I've often used the name Craig Smith to describe what I think Luke Evangelista's ceiling is, not because
Definitely.
They're the same players, but because in terms of production, I think what you could get out of Luke Evangelista is what you got out of Craig Smith at his best, which is the, you know, the 40-ish, 45-point range. But I have been really impressed. He has exceeded my expectations
so far this season. Totally agree. And I think it shows that he's taken a step. He's really struggled last year. He just could not find any offense. He kept stumbling into bad situations all over the ice, and he has really come along. And also, he has made, he's proven and shown to the coaches that if you stick with him with other skilled players, he can figure it out. And that's, you saw this last night with the Calgary Flames game. He made a great play to Stamkos on the sort of wraparound chance that led to a wide open net. He has that skill, he has that speed and that vision to be able to make that play. The consistency is there for him now. I'd like a little bit more goal scoring, but I do like the Craig Smith comparison. I think if he becomes a 20-goal, 40-assist guy, 35, 40-assist guy, like, that's huge. That would be fantastic for this team moving forward.
So let's quickly recap your high-end forwards, low-end forwards new core.
Matt Wood, Brady Martin, Luke Evangelista, and then the other ones would be Svechkov, Schaefer, and Weisblatt.
I think that's reasonable.
Okay.
I think that's reasonable. What about on defense?
Well, okay, so here's where it gets weird. I do not have any projected high-end defensemen.
Yeah.
I think they've got some good defensemen.
So not even Tanner Mullendijk.
I'm not putting him in there yet. I just, similar to the Edstrom, like, I need to see him in Nashville against NHL talent doing that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Could he be the high-end defense that they need? Like, and by high-end, I mean like top four, not even a top-pairing Norris-caliber guy. Just a, a Ryan Ellis maybe.
I was about to say, you're not asking for Roman Josi. You're asking more about Ryan Ellis.
Exactly. Yes. Precisely. If he's a Ryan Ellis, that's great. But the only ones I have in the sort of low-end defense would be Adam Willsby and Spencer Stastny as part of the core future.
Yeah. A lot of the really intriguing prospects to me are a ways out. You mentioned Sorin, Riker, Lee, for example.
Yeah.
They're a ways away. I'm thinking about really the next generation, not the generation following the next generation.
Exactly. And that's the glacial movements of the hockey development. It's like, I'm talking like in 3 years, 2 to 3 years, that's what I'm seeing. In 7-8 years, then we can talk about your Riker Lees and your maybe not seven, but like 5-6 years, your Riker Lees, Igor Surin, the goaltender, Ivan Kovic, who's at Michigan right now, like those guys. But that's so far away. It's like, I can't put them reasonably as part of the core right now, you know?
Right. The issue is, and I am not breaking any news here, the issue is there isn't that top of the line, sure thing, can't miss prospect on the way.
Right.
The Predators hope that Brady Martin can become that one day. I remember there being a lot of comparisons to Sam Bennett, speaking of the Panthers, who the Predators play tomorrow, a lot of comparisons to Sam Bennett.
Yeah.
And Sam Bennett is a hell of a player, but I don't think Sam Bennett is a first-line center, right? Mm. They're missing that. This guy is going to be the next big thing, and you can write it down in Sharpie.
And Sam Bennett took a long time to get to where he is now.
Yes, it took him going to Florida for him to realize his potential as a top draft pick.
He was a 30. His most points in Calgary over six, seven seasons was 36 points in a season.
Right. He's been a perfect fit for the Panthers. He's been great for them. Won the Conn Smythe Trophy last season, if I'm not mistaken. He's been great for them. But even at his best, Sam Bennett is not a franchise center. Mm-hmm. And the of all the players you listed, I don't see one of those players as that type of player. Your Bedard, your Celebrini,
No.
If the Predators get the first overall pick, and I assume it's still going to be Gavin McKenna.
Yeah.
If Gavin McKenna comes into the system, maybe he's that player.
Yeah,
but that's clearly missing.
That's probably true. I think the one player that I'm breaking my rule here because I just said I didn't want to add any of these like recent draft picks who are still in juniors or college.
Yes,
I do think that they have something potentially very special in Riker Lee. This is a kid who basically at the USHL, USHL is not a very offensive league. He just scored goals at will in a very physical, low offense output kind of league. And then now at Michigan State, he's basically like third or fourth on the team as an 18-year-old playing with 21-year-olds. But the other thing is the eye test. Like if you watch Riker Lee, which I have watched some of his games with Michigan State, He has incredible speed with goal scoring that, like, I just don't, you don't see with a Predators prospect very often. He has incredible hands and vision. He's a deceptive shooter. I think they have something special with Riker Lee, but he could also not turn out to be anything. So I'm just saying, like, being very cautious here, Riker Lee is one that I think could really turn out to be something special.
And if I recall correctly, Riker Lee was the first round draft pick acquired in the Yaroslav Askarov trade.
I think that's correct.
So if
it's not the Tampa one.
So
the Tampa one would be the Cam Reed trade.
Right. So if Riker Lee turns out to be, if I'm not mistaken, if Riker Lee turns out to be the player you just described him as, that makes the Askarov trade look a little bit better.
So yeah, for sure.
That's something to keep in mind as well. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we'll wrap up the show. We'll talk a little Centennial Sportsplex because, Alex, you and your colleagues at the Tennessean have been doing some reporting about the future of Centennial Sportsplex, and we will talk about that coming up next. Adam Vingan in with Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean tonight on Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders on 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan here with you. Alex Daugherty is here as well, filling in for Willie Donick. The Predators are back in action on Thursday evening in Sunrise, Florida, against the Panthers. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5, right here on 102.5 The Game. The Predators, of course, lost 8-3 to the same Panthers last week. So we'll see if the Predators can fare better this time around against the Panthers. The Predators then play the Carolina Hurricanes on Saturday before returning home on Tuesday to take on the Colorado Avalanche. The Blues come to town for the first time this season next Thursday. So two home games next week, next Tuesday and Thursday for the Predators. Alex, you and your colleagues at the Tennessean have been doing some reporting around Centennial Sportsplex.
Yeah.
And let's break it down as simply as we can. So the Predators have made a pitch that they are going to invest $30 million in Centennial Sportsplex in exchange for the team being granted control of the ice rink. Is that
right? That's exactly right.
That's the simple way of describing
that's
it.
In most simple terms, that's it. Yep. It would be a 25-year lease that's coterminous with the Bridgestone Arena lease, as it happens. And it would be, they would be granted full operational control of the two ice sheets, not of any of the aquatic or fitness facilities there, but just the ice sheets. And they would also take control of all of the programs there. We're not going to cover nearly as much as probably is necessary to really tell this full story.
Yeah,
because there's a lot here. The story that I put out recently was basically some interviews that I talked to a lot of people at the Sportsplex who run the facility. So these are not Predators employees. These are Metro employees who run the Sportsplex. And this has been a partnership for as long as the Predators have been here. They've worked with Metro employees there. And basically I wanted a tour of the place and say, okay, so the Predators want to invest $30 million. What do they need? What does this place need? And what I discovered was that basically they don't think that they need $30 million. And there's a disagreement behind the people who are operating the facility on a daily basis and the private entity, the Nashville Predators, that want to take over. The quote I have here from John Holmes, who is the assistant director of revenue producing facilities for the Parks Board. He's been in the Centennial Sportsplex since it opened its doors in 1990. You've probably actually seen John Holmes driving a Zamboni at Bridgestone Arena. If you've been to a Predators game, he's been around hockey forever. This quote from him, I think, is kind of says the whole thing. People that come to the Sportsplex know the reality of the facility. It's not fancy, but it's clean. It's well run. They have a great team of workers that provide great programs. And then later on, he said, you could spend a lot of money here and make this a really fancy place, but there's no question about that. But does it really need it? And is it worth ceding complete control of the facility, handing over the keys, so to speak, for just to make it a little fancier? And so then you get into an issue of like, is this a private company taking over a public facility? And that's where the tension is currently right now.
I know, if you've if you've been in Nashville for any length of time and have attended something at Centennial Sportsplex, a Predators practice, a youth game, as you said, this only involves the ice rinks. It doesn't involve the swimming pools or anything like that. But it's an outdated building. That's part of its charm, mm-hmm. that it's not pristine and all of that stuff. But I certainly do think it could use an upgrade or two or $30 million worth. I don't know.
The locker rooms are the big eyesore right now. If you ask anybody in the Predators or not even the Predators, what's the biggest thing about Centennial that needs fix? It's the locker rooms. And I can tell you, and this is part of the reporting we've done, is that the Sportsplex recognizes that. They know the locker rooms need updated. They're cramped. They're kind of ugly and bare bones, and they don't have any of the things that you would want a locker room to have, like, for example, lockers. So they just don't have anything that's really, really nice in there. But, you know, those are things that they would want to improve. But, again, it's not $30 million worth of improvement. It's like a couple million. It, maybe not even that. And that's some of the reporting we've done, is that they've already asked Metro to hand them some funds to take care of the upgrading those locker rooms. Again, this is about a public-owned facility saying, we have what we need. Could we have more? For sure, we could. But the Predators want to step in and take over the whole thing and say, and promise the world and say, this is, we want to add all this stuff. We're going to have brand new locker rooms and all this. You know, is it worth seeding control? That's the central question. And there's a lot of momentum on the Predators and, frankly, from the city. The city is very much on board with this, it certainly seems like. But there are a lot of people who are very worried about this, about what this could mean for just the public skating, you know, public skating and youth hockey and adult rec league hockey and figure skating and all the programs that go on there.
In the Tennessean, a story published earlier today.
Yeah.
Yesterday, Nashville's Parks Board voted to recommend that the Metro Nashville Council approve a proposed lease agreement between the NHL team and the city. The council will have the final say on that proposal, which could begin appearing on the group's agendas as soon as this week. It'll need to earn approval on three readings, which means the earliest it could finish the process would be after the new year.
Yeah, so this was just a Parks Board approval. This is a very standard. This was expected to pass easily. This was not really a surprise. The Parks Board approved the lease proposal to be discussed by the Metro Council. That's just, you know, city bureaucracy. That's right, how it all works. But then the next step is the council takes it to three readings. So the first reading, which should be in December, maybe even December 4th, I think that's not confirmed, but it could be, is a procedural thing. It's not even a rubber stamp. It's just a, hey, we have this thing. All right, we're going to move it to next week. They don't even discuss it. So, but the second and third readings are where you have either discussion by council or public comment, I believe. So those are the big ones. And those will come mid-December probably. And then, yes, January of 26. So this is quick. This is happening like now. And if it passes, then the Predators could take over as early as, January of 26.
So if it does pass, for people who attend Centennial Sportsplex for skating, for games, what can they expect if this passes?
I think that the Predators would tell you nothing would change. And Sean Henry has written a letter. They did a public comment session about this, and they have said that they are going to keep legacy programs. They're not going to raise prices, which was a concern, and that they're not going to change anything about the way it operates. And if you trust that the Predators can hold to that, it can be held to that, then really nothing. But again, this is the concern. The worry is what actually happens when you hand over control. When it's out of the public's control and a private company who is a for-profit, I mean, you know, the Nashville Predators probably want to make money on it because they're investing in it. What happens then? So that, again, if you ask the Predators, nothing's going to change and the prices will be the same and all the programs are there. So you shouldn't expect any changes, but it's just like under new management, I guess is how you'd say.
And the Ford Ice Centers are great, whether you go to Ford Ice Center in Antioch or Ford Ice Center in Bellevue. Now, of course, Centennial Sportsplex doesn't fall under that same umbrella at the moment, but those are great facilities. But as I said, Centennial Sportsplex, part of its charm is its dumpiness. And that's and I don't mean that to be disparaging to the people who work there. Yeah, they're all wonderful people. They work incredibly hard. It could use a fresh coat of paint.
Yeah.
It could use some updated locker rooms with actual lockers.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But part of it is the charm of, like, this building that's been there for decades that the Predators moved into when they moved in. Mm-hmm. You know, the Predators dressing room at Centennial Sportsplex is pretty bare bones as well.
Yeah.
But I'll be interested to see what the fallout is from this if it does pass.
Yeah.
As it looks like it's going to.
Yeah, there's a lot of momentum. I would kind of be shocked if it didn't at this point. But yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of people who are not happy about it. And I think what I'm trying to do and what we're trying to do with Tennessean is just make sure that the both sides are heard, and that's it. And the Predators obviously have a lot at stake here, and I think that's worth noting and have said. They've definitely been saying all the right things, and I think they have a long track record of doing what's right for the city. That's Sean Henry's words, by the way. He said that at the meeting. They have a long history of doing what's right for the city, and so there's no real reason to believe that they would change that or they would get rid of that goodwill. It's just, you know, you when you actually make that decision, you don't know exactly what's going to happen.
Quickly, before we go, what are you expecting for the next couple of games? The Predators play the Panthers tomorrow. The Panthers are the worst team in the Eastern Conference.
Wow.
At 12-12-1 for 25 points as we record this. But as I just said many times, they beat the crap out of the Predators a week and a half ago.
They certainly did.
And then the Hurricanes are the top team in the Metropolitan Division, 16-7-2. So your expectations for the next couple of games?
Like I said before, the only thing we know about the Nashville Predators is they're better than the Calgary Flames. If they were playing the Calgary Flames, I'd feel really good about it. Anybody else, I just don't know.
That is fair.
This feels like a couple losses to me, but
well, you know what? For a lot of Predators fans, that might be mission accomplished, because as well as the Predators have been playing as of late, comparatively speaking, 3 wins in 5 games, I think a lot of Predators fans are hoping they play well and lose. But we'll see what happens when the Predators get back into action tomorrow at 6 p.m. Central against the Florida Panthers. Of course, you can hear that game right here on 102.5 The Game. Thanks to Alex Daugherty for joining me once again on Preds Insiders. We will be back next week bringing you more about the local professional hockey team. Of course, Barry Trotz, you can always hear him on DVD every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Elliot Freeman every Thursday at 5 o'clock. And right here on Preds Insiders every Wednesday. There is no better place to go for your hockey conversations than right here on 102.5 The Game. For Alex, this is Adam Vingan. Thank you for listening. Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game.